Well, a brief discussion of why this collation of recordings has been made. First of all, the setting. A complete Canterbury Tales. In one sense, this is impossible. Harry Bailey, the host of the Tabard Inn in Southwark, proposed that the 29 or so assembled pilgrims should tell, each one of them, four stories on a horse ride to Canterbury and back. Approaching the cathedral, some pilgrims had still not told even one tale. Advancing in years now to, more recently, the early recordings, 17 cassettes. In 1986, John Waite, director of Pavilion Records, Gordon Throssell, the recording engineer, and I embarked on the task of preserving a spoken word version in Middle English for posterity, as John put it at the time. We completed the tales in 7 years, but in doing so, we omitted three of the so-called links, these were the conversations between the tales, and Chaucer's own guilty retraction at the end. Guilty because many of the stories and linking conversations between the tales were indecent. We intended to fill the spoken missing lines later, but unfortunately we never got round to it. And I assure you it was not prudery that prevented us. The gaps comprise 192 lines out of an estimated grand total of 19,335 lines. It's a mere fragment of omission there. 192 lines that we missed out of 19,335 lines. Moving now to the British Library. So we're completing the first entire solo Middle English recital of the Canterbury Tales. The British Library has kindly agreed to complete the text as we have it, firstly by recording the 192 unrecited lines, and also including the retraction at the end. Secondly, by following the Riverside edition of the Tales so that the 10 precious fragments that remain can be serially ordered. The work has been further complicated by the fact that the 17 cassettes were recorded in no strict order, driven by whatever particular A-level tales were then being set by the university boards. The clash of Chaucer's incomplete fragments with randomly ordered audio cassettes rather evokes the vision of the present-day difficulty of stuffing a duvet into an unwilling cover. Stephen Cleary and Nigel Bewley of the British Library have taken up this challenge. A word about pronunciation, and this is always a vexed question. As a professional lecturer and performer of Middle English, I am frequently asked, "How do you know your pronunciation is correct?" And it's a fair question. Some of the past recordings of Chaucer by scholars seem, without my giving offence, pedantically stiff and constrained. If a recital does not trip lightly off the tongue, I believe it cannot represent Chaucer's own voiced version. This must sound natural. On the other hand, it would be arrogant to believe that we had caught the pronunciation exactly right, even though I have based it on a consensus of Middle English research. I have, for instance, taken a cavalier approach towards the final E, pronouncing it or not pronouncing it by intuitive euphony, except where scansion dictated the choice. Obviously, if a line as it stands has only got 9 syllables, then if there's a vacant E at the end of one of the words, you add a tenth. I like to think that Geoffrey Chaucer, if he arrived at a recital of one of my memorised Middle English performances, would have stopped in his tracks as he was coming in, and he'd have said, "I recognise that. In fact, I wrote it. But it is in a slightly strange dialect." That is the best I can hope for. Thank you. Trevor Eaton, also known as the Chaucer Man.